Hello and welcome back to another episode of the David Hessian podcast. Today my guest is Matt Mullen. He is a PT, an online coach, and a former English rugby player. Hello Matt, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So Matt, tell everyone a little bit about yourself and how you got from playing professional rugby, where you were always just trying to be heavier and heavier, bigger and bigger, to stand out on the pitch, to doing a photo shoot and trying to be lean, and now becoming an online coach and personal trainer.
A lot of it happened by accident, if I'm honest. I retired from professional rugby. I've been in professional rugby for about 15 years. I left school straight into the academy at Worcester Warriors and then eventually finished my career at Wasps. I had 6 seasons at Wasps. I got 17 caps for England across that time. And then in January, through my own decision, but partly enforced by injury, I decided to retire and seek, I guess you could call it, a normal job in the real world, and embarked on a journey to try and become a teacher or a rugby coach in a school. And I found it very, very difficult to open doors and get interviews and things stepping from professional sport. And during that time, I thought I'd try and add some extra qualifications or extra strings to my bow to make myself look a bit more attractive for future employers. And the very first thing I tried to do was actually get my PT qualification to try and offer some form of, a low-level S&C type role within a school. I've always been interested and fascinated in my own training. I guess I was one of those annoying players that would always say, why are we doing this? Or how do I do this? And, always been fascinated by it. Took a lot of pleasure in my own training. And then before I knew it, I was doing some shifts in a gym whilst combining part-time work at a school, and then got in touch with Chris Spearman, joined his mastermind group after seeking help for my own diet. And within a week of actually trying to gain some advice on reverse dieting and putting some muscle mass on, he got me ready for a photo shoot and had the photo shoot just before Christmas.
Very good. And what, just for a bit of context for people, from, let's say, your heaviest weight on pitch to your photo shoot day, what was kind of the weight difference?
On shoot day?
Yeah, compared to like your heaviest.
Yeah, probably days. About 30 kilos.
How much is that?
30 kilos.
And the difference? Jeez.
Yeah, I was about 118 at my heaviest playing. And for a large period of time during the prep for the shoot, I'd lost 28 kilos. But by the time you finish peak week, and you lose all that water and you manipulate certain bits to look better for the day, I reckon it was close to 30 kilos.
Jeez. That's a crazy kind of a cut. I mean, you think about how long you probably spent putting on that weight and then to lose it that quickly.
Yeah, it took me a long, long time. I don't think I was ever meant to be 118 kilos. And I don't think most of it was what you'd call good or functional weight. I think naturally I would have spent most of my career about between 110 and 115.
Okay.
But again, I don't think I'm naturally meant to be that big. I was always deemed quite small.
Yeah. That's not small by any standards, but yeah, I know what you mean. And when you were, let's say, training for rugby, and then you went to training for like physique kind of and photo shoot type standards, how did your training change?
So, I guess when you're playing rugby, a lot of it's built around strength. There's fewer reps. You've obviously got the demands of the game and the training sessions to compete with as well. So you're not necessarily specializing in one area. Obviously, your skill development in terms of on-field skills is biased by the position you play. And they will change how a winger would do fitness compared to a prop, for example. But generally, the rule of thumb, especially in season, is strength maintenance, because you've got big, heavy sessions in terms of on-field stuff in the week and also a game to recover from and prepare for in a week. So you can't hammer yourself in terms of hypertrophy training or fatiguing yourself all day, every day. As where when you're training physique-wise, for a long time in my prep, actually, I didn't have much cardio. So you're basically focusing on either maintaining what muscle mass you've got, I guess trying to develop some whilst burning calories. So you can get a lot more specific And I think the nutrition became a lot more specific, especially from Wade, the coach that was leading me through the prep. So I learned a lot about nutrient timing. So how to manipulate your carbs from training days to rest days, but also how to manipulate your carbs around your training. And that's not necessarily something I'd learned across my career in professional sport.
Yeah, and I'm surprised to hear that. I remember you saying that the other day. And considering it's professional sport, you think they'd be like the most clued in on things like that, especially like with carb loading for matches, and even just making sure that most of your weight will be functional. I know at rugby, it's a little bit different. You nearly want to have a bit of excess weight if you can't get that functional weight, just to have the momentum. But even, let's say when it comes to bodybuilding, and they have it all down to a T, where you want to keep your carbs around your training area to keep your training intensity high, even though your calories might be low. So you nearly feel like you're full while you're training. I was very surprised to find out that they didn't do that with rugby. And as far as nutrition, when you were playing professionally, what did that look like? Were they big on it, or was it in the dark?
Initially, very much in the dark, the start of my career. I think that the thing that people forget sometimes with rugby is it's not actually been professional for that long. So in many ways, it's catching up with other sports. In terms of the nutrition, it did develop a lot during my career. And you're saying about, I think the match day stuff was probably the most attention they paid to. So when you were playing an away game, you'd all go to a hotel sort of 3 or 4 hours before kickoff, and you'd all eat together, and the food would all be provided by the hotel, and the either the S&C department in conjunction with the nutritionist at the club would provide the menu, and there'd be a few different choices, but it would all be geared around trying to fuel you for the game. But Monday to Friday, it comes down to performance on the pitch. So what tended to happen was you'd have a nutritionist that would come in sort of every 4 to 6 weeks. And it was pretty much just to measure your body fat and let the S&C department know how you're tracking across the year. And as long as you fell within your parameters for your position, you're kind of left to your own devices. Only if you fell outside, whether you were deemed too small, too skinny, or needed more muscle mass, or to get heavier, would they have a conversation with you. Or again, if you were too fat, they'd have a conversation with you. I mean, it did develop a lot during my time. And I think the attitude was, if we're paying players to play now, we need to try and control your food. So you wouldn't actually get the information yourself, but they employed chefs at the club, and they'd try and feed you 3 times a day, because you're going to eat 6 meals and they're controlling 50% of it. They've got an element of control, but it wouldn't be portion size control, or there'd be like, say, 2 protein portions, a couple of carb options, and you could walk along and within reason have what you wanted type thing. So only the players that knew what they were looking for would be educated enough. But the other thing to think about in terms of comparing it to, say, bodybuilding or prepping for a shoot, you've only kind of got an 8-week window to develop physically. The pre-season is quite short, and when you get into games, you can't make huge strides in terms of either putting muscle mass on or getting huge strength gains across the season, because the demands physically are so high. So you've only got a short window to make changes and adaptations, and then for a large period of the time from about August through to May, it's just about maintaining what you've got and trying to perform as well as you can on the pitch.
That's the thing that I struggle with the most, though, to understand, is you have such an intense period from August to May where, like, recovery is the most important thing. You think that they'd be absolutely doubling down on, like, there's only a couple of things that can affect recovery, and that's going to be, one of them is going to be diet, the other one maybe sleep. And that's something else I wanted to ask you about. What, did they ever give you any information on sleep, or even what's your own opinions on it? Do you think much about it?
No, I think I was really naive to this sort of thing, particularly early on in my career. If I could turn back the clock, I think I would have invested a lot more time, even if it was resources outside the club. I think I've learned a lot listening to other people in this department about sleep and nutrition. I did start to cotton on to nutrition a little bit towards the end of my career, whether it was to try and get bigger myself or try and prevent or recover from injuries. Something I suffered with quite a lot during my time playing. But the sleep was the one area I really struggled with, and I never really tried to fix, but also never paid the importance that it's due, particularly after games. and you talk about recovery. So if I played on a Saturday, I remember certain times I'd not go to sleep till Sunday night. So I just couldn't switch off from the game. So I'd literally sit up and just watch TV all night on the Saturday. And if I did doze off, it'd be on the sofa and then up with the kids on the Sunday and then not go to bed till the Sunday night. And when you're trying to train on a Monday and get the best out of yourself and you're extra sore and extra tired, it makes sense that it's not conducive to performing at your best.
Yeah, 100%. And even just mentally getting over the fact of the game, you know, the amount of, like, you're so hypersensitive to everything when you're in like a game situation, like the amount of adrenaline and everything, you're thinking twice as fast. And then to not sleep for an entire night, like the amount of cortisol that must be running through your blood throughout that whole time, affecting your recovery. It's funny then that you go and get Chris Spearman as a coach, the man who doesn't sleep.
He's good at telling you how to sleep or the importance of it, but he doesn't do it himself.
Yeah, that's it. He doesn't practice what he preaches. Next thing I want to ask you is about how do you compare, let's say you've done both, like you've done one-to-one PT and you've done online. What are your thoughts on which is more beneficial, which one's more beneficial for who, or what's kind of your thoughts on it?
It's a really hard question, actually. I do really enjoy one-to-one face-to-face PT. And I think having, especially learning from Chris and indirectly via Ben Pekulski, the execution element has really benefited me in my own training, but then also seeing the benefit it can make, particularly to inexperienced trainers, like clients of yours. If you can impart the knowledge of how to perform the exercise properly and then see their reaction to the feeling they get inside their muscles and their body when they're lifting like a 2 kilo dumbbell and how fatigued they can be, the amazement and how beneficial that can be to them is really good. But I do think the online element, especially working with clients over a prolonged period of time, because when you're doing PT, you might get to see them twice a week, maybe for 2 hours, and you just don't have any other contact time with them or interaction. But the online stuff, and again, within reason, and you pretty much got 24/7 contact, and you can help them along the way. And if there's a stumbling block, or they've got a social event, or they're worried about something, and they can send you a message, or my PT hub, you can alter something, or you can make a suggestion about if they're going out for food, whether it's an additional session or to cut out food in preparation for that meal, or check which restaurant they're going to and suggest something off the menu. There's just so much more support available for the clients.
Yeah, 100%. I'm kind of the same opinion. It's like, you know, there's only so much you can do as far as execution comes, though. Like, you know, if you spend a month with someone just going through execution, if they don't know it by then, you're going to have to hold their hand when they're eating as well. You know, they're never going to really start to get the gist of it, if you know what I mean. Whereas at least with online, if you're keeping someone for a prolonged period of time, even let's say the coaches we have, the amount of people that he has going at the one time, he wouldn't be able to do that as one-to-one, you know? So it's much more, it's a scalable option. It's a more affordable option. But yeah, I know what you mean. You can't, it's hard to help someone with the actual execution of kind of the mind-muscle connection and getting through the movement when it's online. There's negatives and positives. So next thing I want to ask you, having done so much, let's say, through sports and now going into a career where you help other people get in shape, what would be your advice to your 20-year-old self?
I think from a sporting context, definitely to seek help and advice, whether you find it in the club or not. I think there were areas of my professional job that I'd neglected, maybe, whether that was nutrition or how to train effectively, or if there was anything I could have done to exude a bit more talent or a bit more potential, I probably should have done it. And I always thought I was a hard worker and I was very diligent. And a lot of my thought process was, if I work harder than somebody else, then it will pay off on the pitch. But I just think some of my energy was maybe misdirected. And I definitely think in the space of 12 months of leaving rugby, I think I've learned so much more about training and life in general. And I think that if I'd have been able to take a step back and know that as a 20-year-old, it would definitely have helped.
Yeah. No, that's the only reason I ask that is, like, I usually everyone I interview is older than me and 20 years old, so I'm just like trying to steal bits of advice off people.
Well, you're obviously a lot better placed than all the people that are older than you. You're going to be far better off by the time you're their age.
We'll hope so. What is your favourite book at the moment, if you have one?
It was again through a conversation from Chris. It's the book by Craig Ballantyne. Is it The Perfect Day Formula?
Oh yeah, the one he keeps sending pictures of now.
Yeah, but it was about 3 months ago. It was almost like our first week on the Mastermind. He asked me to describe my perfect day. It was one of the most brilliant exercises I've ever done with him. And to be able to sit down, and it wasn't just like, oh yeah, I want to go for a walk and it's a sunny day. And it's like, no, what time do you start? What time do you do this? When do you eat? When do you train? How many times a week do you do this? When do you do that? And it was the minute detail. And also then listening to the book, it was the first time I've ever done Audible. And I was walking the dogs listening to this. And in the space of like 3 or 4 days, I'd listened to the whole book. And the way he speaks about it, because he narrates the book as well, and the importance of planning your day, even if it's waking up 15 minutes earlier, putting your most important tasks right at the beginning. But the difference in my work productivity for those next couple of weeks was just huge. And I just think it's the one time it's really hit home that making small changes to your day and your mindset could actually benefit your whole life.
Yeah, it compounds when you make good changes like that.
Yeah.
So when it comes to planning your week, how do you plan that out? Because I'm always interested to find this out. Everyone seems to do it differently.
Yeah, so at the moment I'm quite stretched because I'm kind of working three jobs. So I've got my part-time role working as a rugby coach at a school, which is quite full on, but really rewarding, seeing the children develop and enjoy rugby and learn from sport. Then I've got the face-to-face element of PTing clients, and I've got the online aspect. And then you throw into the mix, like moving house, kids, dogs, very full on. So I think that element of planning works really well. And also then trying to fit your training and nutrition in around it. I kind of need that structure and that element of accountability.
Yeah.
So having someone like Wade tell me what to eat, when, and when to train, what days off to have and stuff works really well for me because it takes out a bit of thought process. It makes it really clear because some people that I either work with, they don't really like sticking to the exact same food and stuff, but it doesn't bother me at the moment because things are so hectic. I just like being told what to do and when to do it.
I think that's what happens when you have that much stuff on. It gets to the point where the less choice is better. I found that myself, having like a meal plan there, make it all in one day. And as much as I like a variety of foods, it's just so like good knowing that you have it already decided for you. You just have to take it out of the fridge and eat it. That's it done, you know?
Yeah, but also having been through the shoot stuff, you see the benefit in it. So I think as well, it cuts out an element of choice where I'd maybe be tempted to veer off. And like you've just said about compounding either positive mindset or a negative mindset. If I don't know if this would happen, and I'd obviously have to still be held accountable to Wade, but if I was purely left with a calories option and had to track it myself, I don't know if you stick in an extra 100 calories here or 200 calories here. When you're doing that across 6 or 7 days in a row, you probably wouldn't see the same results or definitely wouldn't see them as quickly. So by having him do it and say, do this, do that, and do it now, not only cuts out that option, but it just allows me to trust in the process and then see the results in the back of it.
Yeah, 100%. That's something I've definitely found myself. If I'm given free range like that with calories, I'd be like, oh, 5 calories there, 5 calories there. Like, it adds up at the end of the day. Say now coming out of rugby, where you'd have like, it's a very kind of strict sport. You have to be very self-disciplined. Do you think that's helped you in other aspects of life, like business, coaching?
Yeah, I think it's I think the way I approach rugby is I never truly necessarily like believed in myself. I always put myself down as maybe not being as talented as some. And then by looking at myself that way, it meant that I worked as hard as I possibly could and made me even more driven to try and succeed. And I definitely feel like that's spilt over into what I do, normal life. And talking to people that aren't embarking on things like shoots or trying to change their physique, I get a lot of people say, well, why are you doing that? Or especially in the build up to Christmas, start of December, it's like, oh, just have this drink or eat this. I was like, I can't. I've got this going on and this is what I want to do. And being able to shut out that noise or those distractions, I think comes from that mindset of doing what it takes to succeed. And I definitely feel like that's a positive, but also it can be. Like I'm a bit OCD about things. That's why I enjoy following a plan. But that determination and that competitiveness in my mindset is definitely there. And I think that's what's allowed me to succeed.
Yeah, definitely. I think it crosses over. Another thing I want to ask you, so you don't have a podcast yet, but you will by next week. Who would be your ideal podcast guest?
I guess I tend to veer towards sporting people. People that I've either admired or looked up to for their performances, ranging from people like Michael Johnson, winning double golds in Atlanta, and then now on the road to recovery after health problems, to more specifically like rugby-wise, someone like Johnny Wilkinson. But someone that I'm listening to a lot, and obviously it spills into the mastermind a bit by Chris, is Ben Pakulski. I share a lot of things like him saying that when he walked on stage for Miss Olympia, he wasn't sure if he was going to do it, and then never felt he was meant to be on there and didn't feel satisfied with how he was and almost disappointed. I guess there's some of that that spills into my rugby career. So I feel like I share a good connection with his story. And then I also try and implement certain things that he's trying to lead his life by. And I'm seeing some of the benefits from that. So I think he'd be a great guest to sit and talk to.
Yeah, definitely, 100%. Another question, any one person dead or alive that you could have a conversation with? So it's kind of similar, but it would be just for yourself.
I don't know. Maybe The Rock, yeah. Dwayne Johnson.
He's a popular one. I hope he's as nice as he seems. I've heard differently though, but
have you?
Yeah, we'll never know. Apparently, if you ever see his movies, he's not allowed to lose a fight in any of the movies. He won't agree.
Oh, right. So like I find it really cool that he takes his gym wherever he goes.
Yeah, he has a truck with a gym in it.
Yeah,
you can tell. Signs are on him. He's getting more and more jacked as he gets close to 50.
Plus, he eats loads of cool food. So
yeah. It'd be a dream to be him, seeing his cheat days. One of the last ones. What, if anything, is the best thing you've bought or that you can't live without for under £100?
Wow, under £100. I was actually going to give you a really good answer, but until you said the £100 bit.
Go with anything. Ignore the price, so you had something. What was the first thing?
A coffee machine. I invested in a rather expensive coffee machine that I thought, I don't know if I should do this. But it's something that I use every day and thoroughly enjoy.
And is it Nespresso, is it?
It's actually not, but I never used to be a coffee drinker at all until I started to implement caffeine for my games. And then slowly the caffeine spilt into coffees, and now I've actually got a decaf grinder for it as well. But yeah, it's pretty cool. And I never thought I'd be into coffee, but having it there and the ability to make a decent coffee is...
If you asked me that question, I would have said the same thing, but I got mine off Facebook Marketplace, like £20-25 somehow. Nespresso, that's not a big one.
What's your present to yourself under £100, out of interest?
Coffee machine, definitely.
Something like my Fitbit or something.
I don't have a Fitbit. I honestly, maybe the mic, that might be the one for the podcast. It's something to look at. Or my whiteboard. That's probably the one, whiteboard, I have to say. That's something I use every day. So I'll have to put that one in. I never get asked these questions. I don't feature on as many podcasts as I do. So thanks very much, Matt, for this. I know you're busy at the moment, moving house and everything. And I know we're quite late in the evening. So thanks so much for your time. Do you want to give your social medias a shout out?
So Instagram for myself is matt.mullen, M-U-L-L-A-N. And then Instagram for the online PT stuff is frontrow.fitness.
Perfect. And he'll soon have a podcast out that I'll be able to share on my Instagram. And all of Matt's links will be in the show notes. Thanks again so much, Matt.
No, it's been a pleasure. Thanks for having me on.